Good afternoon. Hello. My name is Carol Revelt, and I've been assigned by the commissioners to facilitate this technical conference on natural gas vehicles. For those who haven't attended one of these before, we did have an initial conference about 2 months ago. That information is available on our website at www.psc.utah.gov, and you hit the gas tab and it's docket 08-05721. And as a result of the information and the input from that technical conference, the commissioners thought about how they wanted to approach follow-up technical conferences, and we came up with an idea where we would have three additional technical conferences, this being the first one. And today we're going to talk about policy and about infrastructure of facilities. And the second technical conference, we're going to talk about the costs and benefits of natural gas vehicles. We'll discuss air quality issues, we'll discuss conversion kits and things like that. And then the third one, we're going to talk about market forces behind supplying compressed natural gas. And so today we have four presenters and who have graciously volunteered to lead us through a couple of topics. I'll introduce them all first so you remember them. We have Diane Nielsen. She's from the Governor's Energy Advisor. We have Robin Erickson, who has just pinch-hitted for us because she found some additional new information. She's the Director of the Utah Clean Cities. And then we have... let's see, this other fellow, the new fellow from Crestor, I don't...
You can stand up and introduce him. Kelly Maxfield.
Yeah, Kelly?
He's looking at
Oh, Kelly. Okay, great. he's the Vice President of Information Technology and Administration, is that correct? Yeah, and then we have Merritt Norton, and he's from CH4 Energy, a company out of Provo. Yeah. So with that, I'd like to turn the... we'll go through some introductions here just around the room so everybody kind of knows who everybody else is. We do have a sign-in sheet. I'd appreciate it if you would sign in. And then we'll get going with these. These are kind of informal presentations, and then at the end we'll follow up with the discussion and talk about the next technical conference. So you want to start here?
Yes, I'll start here. My name's Charlie Hendrickson. I'm from ATK, and we're looking at building composite tanks for natural gas vehicles. We work with Tim Hunt at Go Natural.
And I'm Steve Roll with Go Natural. We're a company that installs kits, EPA and CARB certified kits, in various vehicles.
Tim Hunt, President of Go Natural. Robin is just known by everybody. And my claim to fame is that I was set by Robin.
There you go.
John Harvey, Commission Staff.
Barry McKay with Questar Gas.
Marlon Burrow with the Division of Public Utilities.
Artie Powell with the Division.
Becky Wilson with the Commission Staff.
Betsy Wolf with Salt Lake Community Action Program.
Gary Robinson with the Salt Lake Chamber.
Ted Boyer, I'm the Commissioner.
Sharon Murray, Office of Consumer Services.
Senator Montevideo.
Carolyn Roll, Division.
Rick Boyd, CH4 Energy.
Ron Allen, Commissioner.
Rick Campbell, I'm the Commissioner.
Craig Wagstaff, Questar Gas.
Jeff Wheelwright, Division.
Mike Millay, Salt Lake Community College, and CCATS.
Diane Nielsen, Governor's Energy Advisor.
Kelly Maxfield, Questar Gas.
Dale Seavey, Questar Gas.
Merritt Norton, CH4 Energy.
Judd Cook, Questar Gas.
And Jennifer Nelson, also Questar Gas.
And?
I'm Al Zabay, Pipeline Safety Division of Public Utilities.
One thing that I would request from people, when you're going to ask questions, please say your name and speak loudly. Our streaming isn't working right now, so we are recording this using this device. And it does pick up pretty well, but if you would speak up.
People are trying to call in, and who's ever on their solo needs to hang up so they can all join us together.
Okay.
And hey, call back.
Richard, some people didn't quite follow the instructions for calling in, so if you could hang up and call back in, we would appreciate it.
Okay.
Thank you. And anybody else who's happened to be on the line. Thanks. So, yeah, that was the following instructions. It's always good to read the entire notice.
For men, it's fairly hard.
So, rate case,
we've got
adjustment, isn't there?
Absolutely.
The dress code?
Oh,
we should be streaming too if anybody gets
phoned in.
The streaming is not working.
It's not working.
And we think we should amortize it over several years.
Carol, where is the best place for presenters to be so that they can be heard by the phone?
We've got a mic right here for the phone when they call in, so if you would just maybe stand up here, that would be great.
Yes. They get warm in here.
You can talk a little bit.
Actually, I do have a jacket on.
Well, we're being recorded.
Is the line closed out?
Yes, yeah, they can call back in, yeah.
Craig did not get the memo, or else he would have had a blue blazer.
Craig got the memo, maybe not.
Happen again.
Probably go on your file, though. Yeah. Along with many others.
Well, this is a nice... Okay, whoever guesses where this is, it gets a small prize. Who said it first? No, not Diane. No,
I didn't call. That's exactly where it is.
Cedar Briggs.
Okay,
if it's Cedar Briggs, if it's, you know, something else, then I didn't say it.
You're right.
Yeah, the elevation, the wind direction.
Let's just say we owe you, and it's not coming out of the 191 account.
I don't know which that is. Who took that?
I didn't say how big it's going to be.
That's true. It's pretty. I'd rather be there. Not that this isn't a good meeting to be involved. Have you ever been down there?
Yes. Hello?
Oh, yeah.
Hello?
Did I sign up?
I guess we're here. I don't know what Carol went.
We should be ready for the contract.
I was home at hotel midnight and you never came out.
Jennifer, are you there?
Very good.
It's been by.
So Carol's just stepped out.
She's getting ready.
We're just getting ready to start.
Okay, great. All right, so without further ado, I'd like to introduce Diane Nielsen and have her talk about it. And John will be working the slides on the computer.
Great. And I'll stay over here and not be worried, but I don't make a very good window, so let me know. If I could have the next slide. If everybody can read this is going to be the format. If anyone's having trouble, we can turn the lights down a little bit. Everybody's okay? Can you hear me okay? What I'd like to do is take just a few minutes to talk to you about how the state of Utah has approached the issue of natural gas vehicles and CNG fuel. I'll give you a long-term perspective in terms of how we've been looking at this, realizing that we're part of the picture, and there are a lot of players, a lot of stakeholders who need to work together, both in terms of defining the vision and defining how we get there, and providing the funding for this to be accomplished. So I'm trying to provide I'm trying to anchor this a bit in terms of where we are at this point in the discussions that we've had. But I want to make sure that everybody understands that defining this vision is something that we need to continue to be discussing and providing input to. It isn't something that we post up and everybody says, yep, that's where we're going. So see this as an iterative process, and please, even beyond today, give me feedback if you think that there are either better things we could be doing or better ways we could be getting there, where we have an opportunity to influence that. Next slide. Utah has four principal energy goals that we have defined now. You could state them, these in a lot of different ways, and there are a lot of sub-goals under these. But in a general sense, the first one is that we ought to be striving to have affordable energy. That doesn't mean cheap energy. It doesn't mean what it cost last week or last year. But it means in the context of our economy, we ought to try and make energy affordable. We ought to have a sustainable economy in the context of that. In other words, and we've got some excellent examples of this, if energy costs are out of whack with our economy, if some other component, transportation, resource development, if something's out of whack in terms of how we're moving forward with economic development such that it isn't sustainable, then unless we fix that, unless we address that and recognize the steps we need to take, we're not going to be very successful in our energy objectives. Strengthening energy security and independence. And this is one that is particularly applicable to CNG, to compressed natural gas. And I'll get into that in a few minutes. But the idea that we can continue to rely on an energy source, imported petroleum, that what is it, at 63%, 67%? I don't know, I haven't looked recently, but it's in that range of our consumption. It isn't sustainable, folks. And so as we look at CNG, I think that's an important consideration in the transportation sector. To reduce emissions, and this means criteria, air pollutants, it means greenhouse gases, because those are now regulated by EPA. However that all ends up in a debate, and whether Congress sets the program or whether EPA sets the program based on regulatory structure that already exists and findings and rulemakings that they will do, we're going to deal with the greenhouse gas emissions. And we need to be able to do that in the context of workable goals. Next. So if you look at the strategy, and this has been the strategy for a long time, and it's serving us well, and partly because Utah is in the enviable position of having developed an energy policy to say, how are we going to accomplish these goals? And first of all, we've recognized, and the legislature in its development of Utah energy policy emphasized the importance of diverse energy sources, a diverse portfolio of renewables and non-renewables. It isn't a matter of one or the other. It isn't coal or natural gas. It isn't gas or diesel versus CNG or LNG. It's we need all of them. We need to be able to recognize what our strength is in terms of resources and in terms of availability and price and energy security and emissions. We need a diversified portfolio. We need to promote economic development. This isn't dissimilar from having a sustainable economy. Improve energy efficiency and conservation. That one perhaps should be first. If we don't do that, then we're carrying costs and burdens that we might be able to avoid or otherwise manage. So energy efficiency and conservation are right at the top. Whether you're talking about electricity or you're talking about transportation. Improving environmental quality, reducing emissions, developing transmission and transportation. Again, in this case, it's principally a transportation discussion. And maintaining quality of life. The targets that have been developed through different discussions and different mechanisms are basically these three that are applicable to what we're talking about today. To improve energy efficiency by 20% by 2015. This had its source within Western Governors Association. It's a goal that Governor Huntsman initially established. The WGA goal is 20% improvement in efficiency by 2020. And the governor and other states have said we could probably get there faster. And in fact, we're finding we can. This has largely been focused on buildings. That was the initial focus of the legislature. But there's been legislation since then that also recognizes this as an important component of transportation. To generate 20% of our electricity from renewable energy sources by 2025. Now that's a real simplified statement of what SB 202 says, and so if you have questions about this, I would really encourage you to go back and look at the bill and understand how that equation is calculated. But the simple wording is bring in more renewable resources into our diverse energy base. And to reduce greenhouse gas emissions to 2005 levels by 2020. This is a goal that we set in conjunction with our work with the Western Climate Initiative. There will be arguments about whether it's in fact stringent enough or not stringent enough, but it's one that we think that we can accomplish within the state of Utah, within the goals I talked about earlier. Next slide, please. So this is what those goals mean, the goals I talked about a few minutes ago, in terms of CNG and natural gas vehicles. Affordable energy. If you look at per gallon equivalent prices, I think gasoline and diesel are about the same, $2.69, $2.59, somewhere. But they're pretty close. And CNG is below that. I think I haven't seen a price on CNG recently, but I know Questar could probably give it to me. Nationally, I think it's about 98 cents is what I had seen from some of the national information. So that's pretty close, 96 cents. A more affordable resource balanced on other considerations. Operation and maintenance of dedicated and aftermarket conversion natural gas vehicles. The state tax credits that are provided that are in place by the virtue of the legislature recognizing the benefit of alternative fuel vehicles, both dedicated and converted. Sustainable economy, a robust fueling infrastructure, and we're going to talk about and hear more about that today. That's absolutely critical. The first infrastructure, perhaps a couple people in this room could quote the day and time, either because they're intimately familiar with it or it made a lot of difference to them at the time it occurred. But the CNG infrastructure on I-15 really dates back to the 1980s. And the first funding was a combination of work with then Mountain Fuel, not Questar, and the state of Utah, recognizing the benefit of having a fueling infrastructure that would enable businesses and individuals to move on that I-15 corridor. Now, it would get you from one end of the state to another. There's a lot of anecdotal information and stories about what that actually means. But for that period of time, it was pretty darn good, and we're now in a situation where it's much, much better, and we have the opportunity to make it more robust so it can support the type of diversity in transportation that we need within the state. workable regulatory framework. The folks that do conversions would underline, highlight, you know, this is critical. And EPA has stepped forward and recognized that, and in fact agreed, and they've held, they've been on a conference line with us, they've held one work session where they came, and we will have others, to rewrite the regulation, federal regulation that governs conversions, to make it more workable. And this is a major step forward in terms of being able to facilitate CNG EGVs and to support key transportation routes. That was the focus behind Governor Huntsman's declaration of the I-15 corridor as a robust CNG corridor for the state of Utah. And it is exactly the reason that Governor Herbert is supporting CNG and the work that we're doing with NGVs as we go forward, because this makes sense. Strengthen energy security and independence. As I pointed out, natural gas production in Utah and adjacent states is a significant national domestic resource, and particularly significant for the state of Utah. Nationally, it's the Utah and adjacent states, but 87% of natural gas production nationwide is domestic, or 89% of our demand, I guess I should say. Let me clarify that one more time to get it right. 87% of our supply nationally is domestic, as opposed to 35-36% in the petroleum sector. Direct displacement of imports of petroleum, again, another way to look at that issue. Alternative fuel during emergency operations. And this is something we haven't talked about too much. We really haven't had a robust discussion with the emergency response people on this, but it's starting to be recognized as an important consideration in terms of business continuity and backup resource capability. Reducing emissions, criteria air pollutants. This is the non-attainment attainment issue, particularly for all these counties on the northern part of the Wasatch Front and down in Dixie. Natural gas produces 60-90% fewer criteria air pollutant emissions, depending on what the configuration is of the vehicle and the fuel. And it reduces 30 to 40% greenhouse gas emissions. So these are some of the legislation and policy activities that have occurred over the last few years. A number of pieces of legislation this last session, particularly HB 392, which modified and focused really on the importance of natural gas vehicles. House Concurrent Resolution 1, which focused on the certification of CNG vehicles, the ability to do the conversions. 2008 included the use of state alternative fuel network. This is where we opened up the state network to the public. If you have a gas card, you can use the state stations in addition to the ones that existed at service stations. And the clean air and efficient vehicle tax incentives were adjusted in 2008. 2007, HB 10, which was Representative Hunsaker's bill on state fleet energy efficiency requirements and has been a basis for increasing alternative fuel vehicles, including CNG. In the state fleet, 2006, the energy policy amendments, and then as I pointed out, outside of legislation, the actions in the 80s to first bring that infrastructure online, and the I-15 corridor initiative in 2009. So these are the locations of the state-operated fueling centers. I have to admit, I don't know why we say that we fuel our gasoline and diesel car and that we refuel our CNG vehicle. I think making the mainstream with these vehicles might start with talking about fueling. But these are the places that you can do it if you want to do, if you want to use a state site that's convenient. And the reason we did this, the reason the legislature took this action is because they wanted to make it easier for individuals, companies and individuals, to be able to access fuel if they chose in their fleets and their personal transportation to use CNG. There are a lot of other alternatives, and I know you'll see some maps to expand what's available by looking at the service stations and other facilities, to say nothing of a number of private sector locations that are used by businesses and largely fleets in the state. But this is what we offer from a state perspective. These are the, just for a quick discussion, what I see as some of the issues that are open for discussion in terms of alternative fuel vehicles, in this case particularly CNG, and emergency response, and the goals that we've set in the state. First of all, CNG provides a secondary purpose if we look at an emergency response for bringing funding in and making sure that infrastructure is robust. It doesn't do much good to build an infrastructure for CNG fueling and for vehicles if it's not going to be robust and supportable, and the time that it will be most critical will be in an emergency situation. The energy during supply disruptions. Now, certainly the pipeline issues are of critical concern here, but realize what the other fuel sources are and realize what the priorities may be in emergency situations, to the extent that we have affordable resources that enable companies, either because they independently manage fleets of CNG vehicles or because the public and other government entities maintain those fleets, in an emergency situation provides a backup and an affordable option. Sustainable economy, again, vital in the private and public sectors, really important to the extent that it leads to business continuity. Some of the most significant expenses in the aftermath of emergencies aren't actually the emergency itself, but the impact that it has in business and being able to bring business back. And the faster business and community recovery. Strengthening our energy security, again, primary part-time backup power source, an option in cases where there may be gasoline or diesel fuel disruptions, reducing the demand and the extent of conventional energy sources such as diesel generators, gasoline, diesel vehicles, and applications in remote areas where you might be even further constrained in terms of fuel sources, and again, reducing emissions. Not the top priority in responding to an emergency, but an important consideration. I specifically didn't entitle this slide CNG NGV stakeholders because I was sure if I did that I would have missed someone and they would be concerned and offended as a result of that. So what I've tried to indicate is the entities that we're coordinating with right now, we being the governor's office, Questar, these state agencies, Utah Clean Cities, as a group, these are the people, the entities that have been involved in those discussions. Now, if I've left anybody off, I want to add you to the list. If there are others who haven't been involved, who need to be involved, we ought to expand that. But I thought it would be helpful for the commission to understand that this is a broad-reaching initiative. It touches a lot of sectors, and it is dependent on support from a variety of players in the commercial sector, the government sector, across local, state, and federal agencies. And I want to thank the commission staff, and the Division of Public Utilities for taking a look at these issues. Because this is important for a vision of Utah's transportation in the future. It's important in terms of the role that CNG plays within our state. And we have an incredible resource and in the fuel itself, but an even more incredible resource in the group of people who are anxious to come together to find out how to best use this technology and resource to meet our energy goals in the state of Utah. And with that, I'd be happy to answer questions or provide additional information that anyone would desire.
It's probably premature to ask this question. We would ask it anyway, but as the state looked at, like, to have a goal of 20% penetration of matched gas vehicles or anything like that, any kind of numbers? Or
you know, we haven't really, the goal has been to have a robust system that sustains the economy. We haven't, at this point, set a number. There are certainly regions of the state that don't have easy access. For instance, it's difficult to get from the Wasatch Front or much beyond Price, certainly not down to Moab in a natural gas vehicle right now, unless you have resources beyond what are typically available in the vehicle, because there just isn't a resource to tap into in that area. There are areas that have natural gas service that don't have stations right now, that would be interested in having them, and they're part of what you'll hear from Robin, I think, is the number of areas that already have stations and would like to have more access and reliable access in terms of compressor size and number of fueling sites.
But there is no, like,
there isn't a target
for, like, maybe buying more stations in this area.
You know, I guess I would hope as this discussion goes forward that that would be a goal that we could look at to determine if it makes sense to try and set a percentage penetration, if it makes sense to try and define areas of service and how we could improve service in the areas we have, where we need to expand and what those priorities are. A lot of it is funding related. Some of it is resource and infrastructure related. But at the end of the day, that's funding related. So I think there's some important questions, but they're not ones that we can easily address just by setting the goal. And I think it takes this entire participation, or an opportunity at least, from this group to participate in determining what those goals might be. But I think it's a good objective, and I think it would help to focus our efforts going forward in the future.
Yeah. Michelle Beck, director of the office, is participating by phone today, so she asked that I ask this question.
Okay.
In the past, both privately and publicly, you have stated that the rate implications should be examined within the docket in which this technical conference has been set. Since she's not attending in person, she doesn't know how many NGV advocates, but it seems there are some, not a lot today. And in the past, there have been very few at commission technical conferences. This results in a disconnect between the meeting held by your office and, because it's had many advocates in attendance, many of whom have complained about regulatory treatment. Yet very few of those advocates were in attendance at the technical conference at the commission at which the rate structure and regulatory treatment were explained very well. We're here today getting a broader understanding of the state policy. How do we close the loop to ensure that there is also a broader understanding of the rate implications?
Okay. I think that's a real good question, and my reference, I think, in part, if I can recall the statement, comes from some testimony that I provided to the commissioners when they were, prior to the time that they had made the determination on rates, but when there was a recognition that there was a docket open, I believe, at that time, to look at some of these technical issues. Since that time, and after I made those statements, the commission has further define what this technical conference docket might look like, and a lot of other things, a lot of meetings, a lot of interest has been recognized. A number of players, as you note, who weren't at early meetings are now involved and understanding that they need to be involved. Sometimes it's hard for businesses and customers and consumers and interested parties to know what's going on, to know where they need to be to raise the issue,
And if nothing else, I think this whole discussion has helped to broaden that level of understanding. A start might be that if there's a mechanism for advising groups and individuals of activities going forward, maybe this is a start for a list, if we could provide a contact person or persons to be able to get that information out on further technical meetings. You might need a bigger room, but that's not a disadvantage. Part of it is helping people to understand the structure and context of what the Public Service Commission does, because they may not totally understand that, and if they understand it, they probably understand it in the context of provision of electricity and provision of natural gas to residents and business, not in the context of natural gas vehicles. So there's just an understanding of the process going forward. I think the fact that more individuals and companies are interested is a good sign. I think the fact that the commission has opened up these technical conferences and helped to open up the discussion on CNG and NGVs is a good sign. And I would guess in the future that there will be more involvement, and that involvement will help to inform what rates ought to be, what the considerations are. When I made that statement, it was basically to say there are a lot of factors that feed to what a CNG rate ought to be for NGVs. And the fact that we're holding the first of three conferences to talk about that, I think is a good recognition that we've got an opportunity and a forum for having that discussion. So this, I think, is a good next step in meeting that objective. Other questions?
Well, what I'd like to do is continue on, and then at the end we could have further discussion.
That's great. Thank you very much.
Excuse me.
Also, for those on the phone, the streaming has been on. It was a an operator error here.
No.
Not me. But so if you want to get off and listen to the web stream, that's great. So thank you, Diane. And our next speaker is Robin Erickson, who's going to give us a hot off the press update of a grant that was received in Utah from the Department of Energy.
Okay. Well, it was one of those things that you had a whole bunch of telephone calls congratulating you on a grant. As I was walking out of a training class, my first telephone call came from the city, and they said to me, "Robin, congratulations." And I go, "Please tell me it was the big one." And she says, "It was the big one." And so you go from 2 days worth of excitement to a telephone call from Diane congratulating you, and then you went, filled her down to your partners. And then but you better be getting ready to work really, really hard. And so the work has already started. So this is going to be some fun. In this grant, for the last 2 years, I was a fleet manager for the newspaper agency for 15, 17 years. And we ran all of our fleet on compressed natural gas. We started with propane, and we were the first company to use biodiesel. So 80% of our fleet ran on all of those different fuels, just so you know, I have a little background there. When we got this grant, it was kind of interesting. For 2 years, I've been running around the entire state of Utah to say, what are your needs? What do you want? Listening to all the complaints. We're more than happy to notify everybody of technical conferences. The last one we did for Diane, we notified. We had over 200 people show up, and we had to narrow it down to 25, so we can help on that. So back to this one. I just wanted you to know that. Back to this one. We had over 100 people that told me that they wanted to get involved in this grant. We had a meeting. We had 50 people show up. Out of the 50 people that showed up, 23 people were willing to put their name on the line, contribute money, and then benefit from the federal grant. So the grant was for petroleum reductions, which were all alternative fuel infrastructure, and also our conversion of our vehicles. Whether the vehicles ran on CNG, LNG, electric, biodiesel, fuel neutral was included in that grant. There's 87 Clean Cities Coalition. this was the big one. You would think 300 million would go really far. We had over 100 applicants. We had over $800 million going for this grant, stimulus grant money. So here we are. We're this little state of Utah, little population of 2.8 million. Do we have a chance? Next. This is what was awarded. Now, Phil's going to like this one because he comes from the Midwest. Thank you. Forward, backward. Forward. This one right here? Okay. Thank you. There were 25 coalitions out of 88 that received money. The West Coast always gets quite a bit. That was $52 million. The East Coast received $89 million. The Midwest, ethanol, corn belt, and everything, $134 million. And Lone Utah, $14.9 million. We had to be a little bit under $15 million. We couldn't be too greedy, so we were off by $100,000. These are our partners. I want you to know on all these partners how wonderful it was to work with every one of them. I need you to know that our strength came from our partners, and our partners are past partners. So when you get these grants, you have to perform, and I have 10 minutes. State of Utah, past partner. Jordan School District, past partner. University of Utah, Utah State University, Flower Patch, Questar, Semi-Service. I think that's it. Those were past partners. But look at some of the big ones. United Parcel, Cisco Foods. So we have a lot of big partners too. But our past partners were our strengths because every time we received a grant, we're supposed to perform. If we don't perform, they're not going to give us a grant again. So what did we have to bring to the table? That much money, that many new jobs, and that many new vehicles on the road. That's huge. Where does the money go? Okay, this is that map. This is that where is all, what are we going to do? When I ran around the state of Utah for 2 years, I listened to everybody. I have a list of over 25 locations as a wish list of where everybody would like CNG refueling or LNG or biodiesel and some of those things. We did the best that we could based upon where the partners wanted to go, based upon where we could get some funding and if we had some core tenants to help us out with the project. 10 new CNG refueling stations, 6 new upgrades with the state of Utah, 3 biodiesel refueling stations, 3 LNG. I cannot tell you how much I was receiving telephone calls from the federal government saying, when are you going to start LNG? Last year, when the price of fuel was $4.60 a gallon, we were inundated by all of these trucking companies that were going out of business. For them to do things, they needed to cut the price of their transportation costs. They were all going under. So everybody says, what if we gave you $10 million? Could you put 4 LNG sites in California, 3 in Nevada, and 3 in Utah? And I said, yep, give me the money, we can do it. Oh, we can't give you the money. Okay. Anyways, so now we're going to start the trucking industry. And this is going to help quite a bit with UPS. And our player in the LNG is going to be UPS and CH4. Questar, that we're going to upgrade. What is the number one telephone call you get? A, don't raise the price of the CNG fuel. B, when are you going to take that money and some money and upgrade our infrastructure? This is going to upgrade all of the current infrastructure that's owned by Questar and owned by the state of Utah. You guys should be applauding that. That is absolutely wonderful. Because your number one call is, we just are not getting a full fill. We've got this vehicle, we go to the fueling station, we put it in, it's supposed to fuel in 3 minutes, and we're there for 10 minutes and we got a half a fill. Well, that's because of the demand, okay? And that's because $4.60 a gallon, or even now, our fuel prices, we're still in peak demand and our fuel prices down, our fuels are down. It also includes 6 new stations that we've been working with Questar, and it also includes covering the incremental cost of these alternative fuel vehicles. Okay, what's our benefit? For me who has asthma, I have asthma. 200,000 people in the state of Utah have respiratory diseases. Okay, energy independence, Diane. 3.9 million gallons of petroleum. Already, right now, we are over three, and you'll tell us, huh, Kelly, we're already over 3.9 million gallons of CNG right now. Now we're going to add more gallons between the biodiesel, the ethanol, the electric charging stations, the CNG, the LNG. look at the emission reductions. I have asthma. Every time I walk out, somebody tells me not to go to work. I have to still go to work on a bad air quality day. This is going to help us in our attainment and our non-attainment areas. This grant, as you'll see in a minute, oh, guess what? And they're telling us to have a second Clean Cities. So we'll go to the south. This is what we're doing. I have talked to everybody from Plymouth all the way to St. George. I've talked to every group that I could get involved to see who could come to the table and play as soon as possible. So the blue dot tells you where the existing CNG stations are. The yellow ones are going to tell you where the new ones are. This may change a little bit. We're still working with Questar on the floor there. New LNG stations, so you see little purple dots, okay? New biodiesel stations, so you see beige dots. Where are the, right there. And then you see the ones that are going to do multiple fuels, like CH4. They're going to have CNG, LNG, biodiesel, ethanol, and electric charging stations provide that. All right, goes through too. What does this help us do? The mandates of Clean Cities is to reduce our consumption of foreign oil, and our inherent benefits are clean air. In the state of Utah, it's really unfortunate. The first telephone call I got when I answered the telephone for Clean Cities is a person coming in from another state and said to me, I want to move to the state of Utah, but I keep looking at all your information, your air quality is dirty, why should I move here? I said, well, let me think about that for a minute. You know, I'm going, oh, this is... And I had to explain to them all the reasons why it was beneficial for them to come to Utah. But when people are starting to look at our state, worry about our air quality, we ought to be taking a look at it ourselves, which I think Diane's group and that whole area is doing a wonderful job at DAQ. Also, the other charge has been from all, like you said, these telephone calls coming in. I've got over 7,000 to 8,000 CNG users that said, okay, now that you have this grant, Robin, are you going to raise the price of CNG? I says, what's that have to do with the grant? Well, are you? And I said, yeah, I'm not over that. Yeah, I says, we are encouraging to keep the price of CNG low to where it's affordable for everybody in the state of Utah. So the calls are you going to raise the price of CNG? Please keep it low. How fast can you get to the infrastructure? And you can't get to it fast enough. And thank you for the reduce of the petroleum. And that would be me. Do you need any questions?
Has the exact location of these stations been determined yet, or not?
I'm going to say Ogden City. That, yes, most of them are exact with the addresses. There are four that are not exact right now. We're hoping in Salt Lake City we might have one on 9th and 9th, but we have to work it out with a partner. And then there's some other ones that we're working on. But everybody is an exact location of where the refueling sites were going. This was based upon who we could have come to the table as a partner, who would come up with the other 71% match. That's a tough one. And where can we put it to where the consumer will benefit at the same time as the large fleets will benefit who are partners on here. And most of it has to do with along that corridor. And keep in mind, we all know we need to hit the other corridors, and we're getting there. We're getting there. It's in our plan.
I was in the bank the other day, and somebody said, oh, you're from the Public Service Commission. How come we don't have any fueling stations over like by Big Cottonwood Canyon? And I'm like, well, I don't know.
Why'd you tell them?
I said, you need to participate in our docket.
It's always a challenge on the east side. The east side's always been a real challenge.
Because his point was, he was willing, but it was... To have it just on I-15, it took time out of his day, and his time was money, and so he was selling his compressed natural gas vehicle because there weren't any stations that were located more.
Did you get his number? We'd like to buy.
Yeah, because you know what?
I got his number.
Either A, buy it, or B, there's still credits available for those home refueling. Refueling sites, just right there, the compressor right there. So if you get those phone calls, send them my way and I'll help.
Great.
Because there's tax credits. Yes?
Robin, on that calculation for the emissions, 7 million pounds reduced, is that just for those new 678 vehicles? Mm-hmm. They're reducing that much? That's significant.
Yeah, that doesn't include what we're already doing really well. And you know, the other thing is that we have...
Already, you have that number too. Is it 30 million?
It's a lot. It's a lot. I don't want to brag for all of us.
Well, brag.
But one thing that I am constantly hearing from people that are outside of the state of Utah is they say, why are you always beating up on yourselves that you're not doing enough? And he says, you're so much farther ahead than California. You're doing so much better than the states around you, where the price of the natural gas is higher and the ethanol is higher and the biodiesel is higher. Why are you beating yourselves up? And I said, because we always want more, better, faster, swifter, you know. And so I try to keep a proper perspective of we're doing a really good job. And I even have some stats off of the Western Governors Conference. According to population, according to the number of registered vehicles, we're in the top six of all those states that were at the Western Governors Conference. So we ought to pat ourselves back with our 2.8 million people, you know, with our population and our vehicles. We do a good job. We just don't remember it enough. But that 15 million will make us remember it more. Anything else?
Well,
thank you.
Thank you, Robin. Thanks for the update.
And now I'd like to turn the time over to Kelly Maxfield from Questar.
Thank you, Carol. I'm appreciative of the opportunity to come spend a few minutes with you today. Just by way of introduction, just a couple of comments. Questar, I want you to know, is very supportive of the state's program that they put together. We're very supportive of the Clean Cities effort. And both Diane and Robin have been very specific that their initiatives are supporting alternative fuels. Okay, we recognize that CNG or natural gas is just one component of those alternative fuels, and we too believe that all of them have a very important role to play in the alternative fuels market, and that CNG is just part of that. Now, having said that, I'll also make the statement that CNG or natural gas is a solution that is here today. The technology is here today. We realize that we can reduce our dependence on foreign oil sources with a technology that's here today. We can reduce emissions by a technology that's here today. And we think it is a very important step in the alternative fuels market, regardless of where we end up in 2015 or 2020, that solution that we have today, although it may not be as clean as what we anticipate will be a solution down the road, it is a marked difference from where we've been in the past, and it is an important step to take in this alternative fuels market, if you will. Now, having said that, the first few slides that I'm going to share with you today are slides that you've probably seen before, and I'm just going to kind of give you an update as to where we're currently at on some of these things. That's the pointer. There we go. This is a chart that I think some of you have seen before. It's a little bit busy. This is the number at the top. This is the most recent 12-month numbers of gallon equivalents of gasoline that have been sold with CNG. Now, my understanding is, and I don't know if I understood the way you answered this gentleman's question, but I think that in the usage of the 3.9 million, we realize about 7 million pounds of reduction in the CO2. The 678 vehicles, whatever we realize from that, will be in addition to what we're currently realizing, because we're using, you know, an alternative source that's a cleaner source than some of those others. But this chart on the left-hand side is the gallon equivalents of CNG, and this slide's really busy, but the blue shaded area references the left-hand side of this slide. The right-hand side is the gasoline prices at the pump, and the red line that goes through there kind of references where those prices are at a given time. You can see the spike that we had in early 2008. It seemed like, you know, one of the things that we've always talked about on a national level, and I also represent Questar on the board of the NGB America, and was also in that organization about 15 or 20 years ago. And at that time, it was kind of the concept of build it and they will come. And nobody ever really kind of believed that. But we started to believe it in 2008, because when we saw the price differential between gasoline and natural gas where it was, it seemed like every available NGV in the country found its way to Utah. And hence the jump in consumption that we saw in the demand on an aging infrastructure that we saw with those increases. You can see at the bottom here, it kind of gives the timeline, which is kind of a short timeline that you've seen this jump. We still have seen, you know, quite a difference between gasoline prices, and as gasoline prices go back up with the price of CNG, that becomes wider. But we've held, you know, we had a little bit of a dip there when gasoline prices came down, but we've held fairly consistent over the last year in the consumption of natural gas. This slide is the same slide, but we now have put in here this dotted line that gives you, it really represents the problem that we had with an infrastructure. Our infrastructure back in the 80s was designed at about 150,000 gasoline gallon equivalents of dispensing. And you see the problem that we had is all of a sudden the demand was there, and that's the calls Robin was talking about, and that I know that you've had some up down here with the pricing in CNG. One of the things in our plan with the state of Utah was in 2009 was to increase the amount of capacity that we had available to dispense through upgrading four stations and adding two new ones. And you know, we were somewhat optimistic and hopeful, but those were also pieces that we included in our part of the grant that we hoped that we would get some offset to those expenditures. In a minute I'll go to the map and show you, it's a similar map that Robin had with where those stations are and what we're currently doing. But you see the problem that we have when we have a system designed at a certain capacity and we're almost, you know, we're over two times exceeding that.
Question. Sure. What are the units on the left-hand side of
these? These are gasoline gallon equivalents of CNG, okay? Carol?
With the grant money and the upgrades to stations and whatever, will it take your design capacity and bring it up to like 400,000, or what's this with all this?
Yeah, we'll give you kind of an idea in just a minute. I've got a slide that shows you what we included in the grant. We can talk a little bit about that, but we recognize we have to be closer up in this area and into the future with the hope that this thing, you know, takes off and that we have more vehicles coming in. I'm going to talk a little bit about some of the future issues that we've got to deal with, but hopefully OEMs, you know, get back in the picture. We have a favorable climate for conversions and things like that where we get some of those things in line, and that we're hoping that the usage will continue to grow up or to go up, and we've designed some of that into our plans into upgrading these stations. Okay, this is the map. Not quite as much detail as Robin had on there because we haven't put into here any of the things that we were looking at with the grant. I think this is a map that you've seen before. The blue circles indicate Questar-owned public stations. The yellow dots, including the existing state stations. And I think, Diane, I think you had five on your list. I think one we have on here that might not have been on your list was the Rampton building out on I-215 and 4500 South that I know also allows public access. So
yeah,
we actually had six.
That's true. The difficulty out there has been that it's just been such a slow fill that
right.
It isn't even one that we advertised.
Some of the same problems that we have with some of our stations. So
yeah. We try not to draw people in.
You'll notice at the Wasatch front area that there's four blue squares there. Those are the stations where we, in 2009, anticipated increasing capacity. Those include the Ogden CNG public station, the Woods Cross Bountiful station, the Orem station, and the Sandy station was also upgraded to handle more capacity. I'm pleased to tell you that they are turning dirt as we speak at the Woods Cross Bountiful station, that all the permits and everything are in place, and they're starting the construction of that. We're within days of starting that at Orem. Because our current plan was to take some of the compressors that are at those locations, and it's kind of a domino effect, we then use those in some of the outlying areas to increase the capacity in those locations. We, as those stations are completed, we'll then take those compressors and move them to other locations.
You know what CFM you're going up to on those?
I do. At Woods Cross, we're currently at 400 CFM. We're putting a 700 CFM compressor in there. We're also putting an electric drive in at that location that's currently been an engine drive, an electric motor. The Orem station is currently 100 CFM. We're going to 700 CFM there. The 400 CFM at Woods Cross will then be moved to Ogden, that is currently 100 CFM. And those 200 CFM units, we are planning on relocating those to two new stations that we committed to, one in the Beaver area, one in the Washington County area, which is actually in Hurricane. And it is our plan right now, and with our contractor, who is MPL, they've committed that four of these stations, Woods Cross, Ogden, Orem, and Hurricane, will be completed by year end. The fifth one, here in Beaver, probably will lag just a little bit because we kind of got a two-step domino effect. We have to get Woods Cross done, then move to Ogden, and then Ogden comes to Beaver. One kind of problem we have with Ogden is where the current CFM station is in a bankruptcy situation, so that tends to slow us down a little bit, and we're working feverishly with our legal people to try to make sure that isn't going to be a hindrance to us going forward.
When you're during these turnovers, how long is that station going to be down, unable to pump CNG?
Most of these, we're going to continue, and it's just going to be like in Woods Cross, we're going to place that station in, take the other one out. It's just a matter of hours or a day or two on one or two of those. In Ogden, we're actually going to a new location, so there will be no downtime at all. We'll start one up and then we'll shut the other one down. The others are newer stations that will. Another thing that we've been doing and that is part of our grant that we'll continue to do is that we're increasing the number of dispensers that we have at some of these stations with the increased capacity, and we're also putting card dispensers on there so it's easier access.
Are you increasing the storage tanks on as well?
Yes, we are. That's another part of the grant that we had, was some increased storage on our stations. And as part of the grant, and what we're looking at is on these existing stations, there are 19 Questar-owned stations in the state. There's two others in Southwest Wyoming, but part of our grant is 18 of those stations in Utah. We plan on upgrading so that we have larger CFM capacity, and some of those will also be increased storage so that we can dispense and get a fuller fill in a quicker amount of time, which has been an issue for us.
See, now that's what shovel ready is all about.
Having it halfway time before you get it.
You had to be shovel ready even to be on the grid.
Well, we realized with the governor's program and so forth that those were things that we needed to do. You know, we were hoping that we could get money to offset it, but if this was going to be a reality at all, those are some of the things that we needed to do immediately to address an existing problem. Mm-hmm. So. Okay, just this kind of goes to the grant. We estimated in the grant that cost of new stations would be around $600,000, and we had six of those in the grant. We estimated that it'd be about $468,000 to upgrade a station. And a lot of that is in, the increased size of the compressor and so forth. Whenever we're installing these stations, I mean, we're basically working with local authorities and so forth. We're installing the NFPA 52 standards with working with the local authorities, you know, on approving those stations. So from a safety standpoint, I know that was one of the issues we want to talk about. From a safety standpoint, we feel like we're meeting those requirements by working with the local jurisdictions and with the NFPA 52 requirements. We also, you know, in some of the, we have an extremely aging infrastructure, which has created, some increased cost on the maintenance side. We're hoping with some of the upgrades and things like that, or our plan is with the upgrades, that we'll be able to reduce some of those maintenance costs on an ongoing basis too. Some of the things that we're looking at from that standpoint is looking at electric drives, electric motors versus the engine drives. It creates a smaller footprint, a smaller compressor, if you will, that we have to place. There are reduced requirements for air cooling and things like that in that design. There may be an increased cost or two for running three-phase power to that, but we don't have a great deal of experience. We've only got one or two in our system. But where we've had the engine drives, and from an industry, we have seen a significant reduction in maintenance costs going forward with the electric motors versus the engine drives, and there's also a reduction in emissions. with those.
Question. I'm glad to hear that the upgrades at the existing stations are going to lower O&M, since that's been an issue around here. How much additional O&M is going to come from those new stations? And are they going to kind of balance, or is the net effect of all of this going to be an increase in that total O&M?
I think in the short term, until we get these upgrades in, you know, we can anticipate with that aging infrastructure, we have some O&M considered our concerns there with increased costs, with replacing parts and those types of things. The electric drives that and the information we're getting from the industry and their experience compared to our experience with the, or excuse me, the electric motors compared to the engine drives from our experience, we're seeing figures in the 1 cent per gallon range. We're on the engine drives, we're maybe 12, 14 cents. So we're hearing that there is significant reductions in maintenance going forward. And that's part of, you know, part of our plan with those that have that experience, that we can recognize some savings there.
Do you have a sense of whether or not the fact that the O&M on these new stations is lower, it will,